you know, several years ago, I was on a podcast episode with Brush Beater, and we were talking about a bunch of topics in marksmanship. But near the end of it, he asked me if I could have one gun to carry me to the end of the world, what pistol, what would it be? And I remember saying a Glock 19, thinking it was funny at the time because then I didn't own a Glock and I still don't own a Glock. And I also immediately regretted that decision because I have so many other thoughts about what I actually would take with me. And I want to come back to that idea in this episode, because this episode is about a broader conversation around what is a good kind of starting end of the world armory. You know, what would be the selection of rifles and pistols and handguns? Like, what would we suggest? So before I get into it, welcome to the Everyday Marksman, the podcast where it's all about tactical skills for living a more adventurous life. I'm your host, Matt Robertson. Thank you for joining me today. Our website is everydaymarksman.co. There you'll find today's show notes, our awesome community of marksmen, YouTube channel, articles, and our email subscription lists. Thank you for joining me today. I'm glad we could be here. You know, I've been a little busy the last several weeks. I haven't had an episode from me in a while. It was not intentional, I promise. I've had a bunch of other projects going on, including writing an article for a magazine, which should be a big feature coming out in July. So look for my name if you're a subscriber to it. I won't name the magazine just yet. I've written for them several times before, but this was like my first big feature. So it'll be cool to see when it comes out. All right, so on to the topic of the day. I have been seeing this question floating around the internet, around this: what would you suggest as a solid basic armory for a serious new gun owner? Now, usually the context is a friend or a young man coming of age into the shooting world. And the answers have been fun. I mean, some of them entertaining, some of them are serious. You can definitely see the biases of the authors with their own preferences. Some people are very outdoors oriented with hunting rifles and shotguns and revolvers. Some people are more tactical oriented. So today I am sharing my personal answer to the question. You know, I'm couching it in terms of the martial marksman and scenario X. So I'm not leaning purely on the tactical, though. Rather, my preference is for someone starting out to be thinking about versatility and reliability. Too many marksmen, including me sometimes, needlessly go into optimization, air quoting with my fingers. And by that, we think of all these possible situations and then work backwards to build a rifle or a collection of guns tailored towards that situation. Scenario X could easily be one of those. But as the martial marksman principles dictate, there is no such thing as optimum. We are, in fact, better served with a tool that does many things pretty well rather than a tool that does one thing exceptionally well at the expense of usefulness elsewhere. Sure, there's a time and a place for specialist tools once you've really built up your foundations, but this podcast is about actually building that foundation. So let's dig in. And by the way, this article has a ton of links in it. So if you come by the website, everydaymarksman.co, check out the show notes for this one. I've got links to everything I'm talking about, other articles. I'm going to make a lot of cross-references here. And while you're there, be sure to hit that big green subscribe button. Join the email list. It's the best way for me to keep in contact with you. All right? Cool. Thanks. All right. So on to the armory. So like I've done before, I'm breaking this into tiers of importance. I've done this with what I call the gearamid, like what kind of gear should you buy first? I've done this with your training zones and physical fitness. I like hierarchies. What can I say? I'm a hierarchical person. So the tiers are the first one being the martial marksman, the second one being the well-rounded shooter. Tier three is for specialization. Oh, sorry. That's actually it. Tier three is precision support, looking at my notes. And then tier four is specialization. And after that, it gets into, you know, just for fun. So let's go back to tier one, which is the martial marksman. This is the starting point. If you are at all serious about self-defense, home, and community protection, this is the core of it. And a beginner's top priority falls along two things. One is a common and reliable semi-automatic pistol, and the other is a common and reliable semi-automatic rifle, preferably in an intermediate cartridge like 5.56 or 7.62-39. Now, I have some important caveats and additions to go along with this as well. So let's start with the starter pistol. I said in the beginning, a martial marksman should have a common and reliable semi-automatic pistol. That's not terribly specific. I know a lot of listeners and readers want something more concrete. And the thing is, I found that handguns are really a personal preference. Once you find one that you like, or you are a particular family of them, it ends up becoming your default suggestion going forward. And you can tell where other writers go when they only suggest something like get a Glock 17, Glock 19, Glock 43, Axolot 19, whatever. Like, they are Glock people. And I think that's a mistake, because a lot of times people just fall in love with the first thing that works for them. And they don't bother experimenting out. At this point in kind of my shooting life, I've gotten to try a lot of things, including stuff I haven't had to pay for. So I have a broader experience with different handguns. Now, I've never beat any of them to death. So, you know, I have a set of rules I like to go with, saying, if you're going to buy your first gun that's going to last you the end of the world, here are some things to look for. Okay. Number one is you want something with a proven track record of reliability. Number two, I think it's most appropriate to get something in a compact size, roughly 15 rounds of 9mm. Third, I think something that's currently or formerly issued to police departments, government agencies, or military units is an easy ask. There's a lot of those out there. They don't necessarily even have to be U.S. agencies or military units. International has a lot to offer as well. But that kind of solves your reliability thing. And lastly, it needs to be comfortable for you to both hold and shoot. All right, so let's look at these reasons a little bit more in depth. Reliability is number one. This is not your weekend match gun that only costs you the win if it goes down. You may very well stake your life or your family's life on this gun going bang every single time you pull the trigger. So do not skip reliability, period. End of conversation. That is most important thing in this most important thing here. Second, I really like compact pistols for versatility. You can obviously go to a full-size duty pistol, but then it would be more difficult to use for concealed carry. A compact-sized pistol is still large enough to have most of the ergonomic benefits of a larger pistol and nearly the same capacity, but it's still small enough to easily conceal for most people. If you're really skinny, okay, different thing. On the other hand, going down to like the subcompact pistols, that gives up a lot of capacity, a lot of ergonomics, and a lot of marksmanship potential because they're harder to shoot. So in the world of pistols, the compact is like the just right Goldilocks size. Now, point number two, a gun that was or is widely used in military units does a few things. Like I said, it usually solves a reliability problem. Second, it means the pistol has plenty of support for spare parts, holsters, and gunsmithing know-how. From my personal experience, my first several pistols were all ones that, while they shot great for me, they were never that popular. Like, they never got picked up by agencies. Nobody issued them for police departments. So just nobody made holsters for them. Like, I could barely carry it. Let's go into these little small shops. It was very frustrating to buy what you think is a fantastic pistol, only to find out that you're pretty much never going to get to carry it. All right. It's fine for your second or your fifth pistol, but for your first one, keep it basic. Keep it to something that you know you can support. So what do I think meet this criteria? What pistols would I suggest? Well, I mentioned the Glock 19 already, though I don't even own one, but that's obviously going to be a good answer. They're ubiquitous. Everybody in the world seems to own one except me, all right? SIG P320 series, Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0, the FN 509, I was the midsize in particular. I do think the FN 509 is a nice pistol. I have the predecessor, the FNS 9, which never got support, but the 509 has done pretty well. I think the HK VP9 SK, HK P30S, the Walther PDP, CZ75 series, particularly the P01 and the PCR, which I own. It's my daily carry pistol most of the time. Also the CZ P07. And lastly, I've got the Beretta 92 series, particularly the 92X Centurion. Now, if I could have only one, going back to the question that Brushbeater asked me those years ago, I would probably take something from the Beretta M9 series. The M9A1, which they don't sell anymore, but M9A4, one of the newer 92X models, doesn't really matter. It's not the most compact, nor is it the newest, but I trust the platform so much and I shoot it well enough that I'm willing to sacrifice a bit on that compactness front. You know, in hindsight, I had wished I had gotten an M9A1 back years ago when I had that and a 92 A1 in my hands. And I bought the 92 A1 thinking it was the cooler, niftier gun at the time. It had a little more technology behind it. And knowing what I know now and the fact that nobody supports the thing, I wish I'd gone the M9A1. It would have been fantastic. But Matt, you say, I can't mount a dot to that. Okay, fair point. Pick something else that you can, like the 92X or any other pistol I mentioned here. I will say though, and call me a FUD if you want, but I think dots on pistols aren't necessary for most shooters. I'm not going to go to the end of saying you shouldn't be doing it, but they're not necessary. They do have an obvious advantage for those who practice with them. But I don't think that advantage becomes really apparent until you're talking about high levels of skill or you're talking about longer distances. I think off the bat, I think red dots give you a huge advantage, especially like longer pistol shooting distances. But most people don't even shoot that far. Let's be honest. All right, so that's the starter pistol. What about the starter rifle? Well, as with pistols, this is a little bit vague. There are a lot of rifles that fall into this reliable semi-auto category. And the bottom line is if you don't live in a state that stops you from doing so, this should be an AR-15, something along the lines of the minimum capable carbine, which I've talked about a lot. So let me refresh you on that. Do you think it needs to be something in 5.56 or 223? 16-inch mid-length or a 20-inch rifle length, lightweight barrel. The specs of the rifle need to meet the military technical data package, the TDP. That's, again, reliability and parts conformance. And it needs to be accurate enough to meet our basic standard of 10 inches up to 300 yards, going back to our training zones. That is a pretty easy standard, accuracy-wise. I would be hard-pressed to find a rifle in the market these days that doesn't at least do that with good ammo. Okay, so that's an easy one to hit. But you definitely don't need better than one MOA for something like this. Now, there are a lot of really high quality brands out there that are reliable enough for duty use. So take your pick, right? Like I always throw out there a Bravo Company, Daniel Defense. I do like the new Colt Enhanced Patrol Rifle, Sons of Liberty Gunworks, Psionics, and there's plenty of other ones, right? Do pay attention to whether or not the brand you choose holds contracts though. If they're getting used by police departments and government agencies, they're probably good to go, right? And so there's indicators for you. Now, if you can't buy an AR-15, and I know the pain, I've lived in states where it makes it very difficult to get one that's not neutered, I think you should still stick to the same requirements that I had for a pistol as close as you can. Something reliable, preferably currently or formerly used by agencies or military somewhere in the world and comfortable to shoot, all right? So in that case, I would replace compact with lightweight, you know, as light as you can get it. Now, before going to tier two, we're not done yet because before I think someone who's building their first armory goes on to the next tier, you need to take care of some other things first. Seeing as the first tier is the core of the armory, you need to pay some extra attention to it. So at a minimum, I suggest buying a second pistol. Ideally, it would be one of the same make and model of the original one. Now, barring that, at least a second pistol also meets the same guidelines. All right. Now, for the rifle, I would say get a second one. But if you can't do that, I would settle for a minimum of a complete spare bolt carrier group, complete set of spare springs, ejectors, trigger, and all those spare parts. That way, you know, if your primary rifle dies on you, you have the parts you need to get it back up and running, even if it's not immediately in the middle of the fight. All right. The point here is that you may find yourself in a situation where you cannot just go out and buy a new gun on demand or even take your current one out to get repaired. All right. So having a complete spare might save your bacon in tough times. All right. Not to mention that a full complement of magazines, that should go without saying. I aim for at least six magazines per pistol and 10 per rifle, and ideally more if you can spare the budget. Let's get on to tier two. So tier two is the well-rounded shooter. With the absolute foundation out of the way of our basic pistol and our basic rifle, we get to branch out a bit. So in my world, the well-rounded shooter is two things, each one serving a slightly different niche, and you can prioritize which one you think would come first. So either way, I think this includes a 12-gauge shotgun, pump action, semi-auto action, whatever is within the budget. The shotgun is like the multi-tool of the shooting world. Yes, you can use it defensively, but it's also an incredibly powerful tool for hunting. You know, you could probably get away with hunting small game with a 223, an AR-15 from tier one. The 12 gauge opens up the ability to hunt just about anything from birds to moose. So anything on four legs in the continental United States, you can hunt it with a shotgun. And it also works well for defense. And you have all the versatility of different kinds of loads you can fire through it. So it's just a very versatile tool that I don't think gets its due anymore because shotguns aren't as cool as they used to be, though. I get the sense that that's shifting in the market a little bit. Of course, everybody's looking at lever guns now. Now, as before, I think it's important to look at shotguns with proven track records for reliability, especially ones that you're going to use defensively. So obvious examples that stand out to me are like something like the Mossberg 500 and 590, the Benelli Supernova on the pump side. For semi-autos, the Beretta 1301, A300, Benelli M2, Mossberg 940. Just to rattle off some options. All of these are linked in the article. Now, the second gun I add to tier two is a 22 long rifle, long gun. Right, either a common semi-auto like a Ruger 10/22 or a bolt action like my Tika T1X. The goal of the rimfire is two things. First, it provides an inexpensive marksmanship training and practice tool. So if ammo gets scarce and you don't want to go your live fire with a 223 because you don't have that much of it left, a 22 is a great tool for that when you know the limitations. Secondly, it's useful as a compact and quiet weapon for hunting small game and pests. Even better if you can suppress it. So it's just a fun thing to have. It's very useful, though not as useful as the shotgun. Tier three is precision support. So this is where I get to introduce full power rifle cartridges. Now, in my mind, this is firmly in the realm of bolt actions for precision, but a quality semi-auto will do. They're going to cost more to get to, right? So tier one and two focus heavily on our proficiency zones of 0 to 200 yards. I was intentional on my part that handgun, shotgun, and AR rifle are going to do you very well 0 to 200 yards. Tier three is where we're looking to stretch to the operational zone of 300 yards and beyond. So for this, I suggest a scoped rifle chambered in 308 Winchester. And I know I'm being a little old school here by suggesting the old 30 cal warhorse, while everyone else had moved on to 6.5s and as the Dewall caliber. In my mind, the 308 still works extremely well at the practical ranges that we're really talking about. Remember, the most marksman's training zones really only go up to 600 yards, realistically. And it's probably going to be way less than that. The difference between a 6.5 and a 308 at those distances is more or less irrelevant. Okay. 308's well understood ballistically. It's easy to reload for, and it offers a really nice balance of cost to performance and barrel life. Now, obviously, you can opt for semi-auto. However, my observation is that getting to a high level of reliability in a semi-auto large frame, like 308 platform, is not going to happen cheaply. Typically, you're in for at least $2,000 just for the rifle. If we're talking about starting an armory, I think there's the best bang for your buck by going for bolt action, which you can get for $600, $700, and it'll be perfectly functional. So what are my picks for the precision category? All right, well, first one, Tika T3X, particularly a CTR, you can get one. Bergara B14, Howa 1500, CZ600, and the Ruger American Gen 2. Those all kind of span the price range from, let's say, about $500-$600 up to probably around just over $1,000. So still very reasonable in the scale of what you get. Now, here's an alternative, though. Let's say you don't want to go the 308 route. We're still really talking about 300 to 600 yards, right? So you could instead use that same budget and go towards the precision AR-15 route, like a SPR. And you could then take advantage of something maybe like the 6mm ARC, a 6.5 Grendel, or some of those other more specialty rounds, because you've got your bases covered already. So now you throw on an SPR upper, gives you that precision support. Cool. I'm good with that. Perfectly reasonable too. So that's my main three tiers. What else do we want to get to? Because tiers one through three cover just about anything you might want to do with a firearm. And it's the fantastic starting place for anyone looking to build a collection. But I know there's going to be lots of things that I didn't mention. So I want to touch on that for a second. So I guess the specialization tier, I mentioned this is not really a tier four, but it's a specialization. And this tier is all about gaining enhanced capability with existing weapons or filling some kind of ultra specific niche. So the very first thing I'll point out here is suppressors. You know, while really unnecessary in the big picture, suppressors are a wonderful tool for enhancing safety, communication, helping train new shooters, and just overall making shooting a more comfortable experience. Second in specialization is where I'm going to put the short barrel rifles and the subguns, the PCCs, the short PCCs. As you might know, I've been venturing down the subgun rabbit hole lately myself. I got picked up a GHM9 recently, so I've been building that up and kind of planning around it. Look for articles about that. But these platforms are about enhancing your capability at very short distances. And they have some unique benefits as long as you're aware of the trade-offs, like noise or trading off ballistic potential if you're going the PCC route. Now, the third item in this tier is specializing in long range. So this is less to do with the rifle and more to do with the cartridge, right? So earlier I mentioned going down to 308 as like the preferred dual precision support cartridge. Now I'm talking about things like 6.5 PRC, 300 Win Mag, 6 Creedmoor, and like the ones that are all really specialty. They've got benefits, also got drawbacks, all right? Next, I'm talking battle rifles. So this is your semi-auto platform chambered in a full power cartridge. This is your AR-10, M1A, that kind of thing. You could elect to use the same ammo used in your precision rifle, which would have its own benefits, or you could go another direction entirely. Personally, that's the way I would go. I like the idea of my bolt action, my main bolt action being a 308. Oh, and I've also got a 308 semi-auto, which is not a precision tool necessarily, but they can share ammo. Last thing I'll add to the specialization tier is large bore handguns, something like a 44 mag. This is mostly having to do with outdoor stuff. Like if you're in scenario X and you live out more rural areas and you're going hunting, I have lived in bear territory before and I would be a lot more comfortable knowing I had a nice big revolver on my hip that I could bring into action if needed. All right. The last tier I'll discuss is what I call the because fun is allowed. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here because this is pretty much the everything else, right? What we're talking about is weapons that are still effective at what they do, but they come with a lot of downsides in one way or another. For the most part, this is old warhorse rifles, things that served admirably for decades, but now today lack parts availability. They have ballistic inefficiencies. They just aren't as good for modern rifle things. So vintage lever guns, old war rifles like the M1 or Enfields and Mausers, muzzle loaders, all that kind of stuff goes here. You get here because you're passionate about it, because you're extremely limited on what you're allowed to buy. It's not because you're doing anything that can't be done cheaper or better with weapons that are already available. Don't get me wrong, a lot of great stuff here, but I'm trying to keep the scope of what I think makes sense for a martial marksman. All right. So they don't really go down this because fun is allowed route. So that's my take on this question. What do you think? Come by the website, everydaymarksman.co, hit that big green subscribe button, find this post, and then tell me what you think. Come by. All right. That's it for me. See y'all next time.